Are you guys ready?
Let's do this.
Let's start the show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Fuck it. Enjoy the show.
Lights, camera, action. All right, here we go. Episode 6, dedication episode. Earlier in this week, we had some sad news. I lost my grandfather. It was a rough battle. It was a tough time. You guys definitely been there for me for this time, and I appreciate all the love that everybody's been given. We just want to dedicate this episode to my grandfather. He left us on Sunday morning, at the age of 84, Navy vet, definitely a good guy, and will be sorely missed, but just, yeah.
Your grandpa was one of the best people I knew. He was one of the funniest guys. I can remember him, you know, being a huge Raiders fan and, you know, always rivaling with me about the Chargers, and anytime I'd come over there, he'd be like, oh, look, asshole's here. I'm like, why are you calling me an asshole? He's like, well, you're a Charger fan, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, then you're an asshole. I mean, obviously, he's maybe not the nice thing to say, but
no, he was definitely he cracked me up. Yeah.
His personality, I mean, I think my mom and sister met him like once or twice, and they're like, oh my gosh, Dean's grandpa was one of the funniest people I ever met.
Yeah, he was a little rough around the edges, but yeah,
he had a personality that could definitely liven up a room.
He certainly had quite the personality. I've been over at Dean's house a few times, and I swear it would be one inappropriate remark after another, and it just kind of lightened the mood. Everybody starts cracking a smile. Everyone starts laughing, you know, and obviously we know he's joking. He's not necessarily serious about these things, and, you know, it just kind of puts a smile on your face, and you start laughing, and he just really knew how to brighten the mood in the room, and honestly, yeah, he will definitely be missed, and, you know.
Yeah, best wishes to you.
Yeah, exactly.
All we can do is ask for him to rest in peace and be, you know, happy.
Send our condolences.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for those good stories. That brightened up. But let's liven up the podcast a little bit and snap out of it. Big news on the baseball front. Brad Hand going to Cleveland. They're sending over their top prospect, Mieja. Adam Simber is attached to that deal. Also, we had Machado going to the Dodgers for 5 prospects. That was pretty crazy. I know it definitely wasn't 5 prospects overall. Really, just one major prospect with a couple other names attached. But
well, let's talk Hand first.
Yeah, let's go Hand.
I mean, Mejia. Obviously he was a top 10 prospect coming into the year. Kind of got off to a slow start, but top-ranked catcher in all of baseball right now, number 15 right now on MLB's. I think Keith Law has him as low as
number 3.
Number 3.
As high as number 3.
I thought it was 5, wasn't it?
Gore's number 6, and he had Tatis as number 1.
Yeah, and so
so there's different opinions on that, but regardless, he's a top 15 prospect.
Regardless, he's the top-ranked catcher. And obviously, I know I was looking at some of his, you know, obviously his background. He's, you know, the first player since the 60s in the minors to have a 50-game hitting streak.
When you texted us that stat earlier in the day, I thought that was incredible. 50 games with a hit?
And you look at Joe DiMaggio's record, you know, what was that, 56-game hitting streak, which is, honestly, that's a record that's never probably going to get touched.
Yeah, but and that's the other thing. People will say, like, oh, that's the minors, it's not pro ball, all this other stuff. But
it's still remarkable.
Regardless of whatever league you're in, if you can string together a 50-game, that's incredible.
I think, too, with baseball being a pitcher's game, I mean, the best hitters in baseball fail 70% of the time. To be able to go on a 50-game hit streak at any level of baseball, whether you're talking about high school all the way into the professional league, it's incredible.
But Andy grades out a 70 on the arm, so he's got a cannon behind the plate. So I think we're looking at, you know, maybe if I'm doing a player comparison, maybe a Yasmani Grandal who can hit with a better average.
He is also a switch hitter.
Maybe doesn't have the power potential that Grandal did, but honestly, the Padres don't necessarily need the power right now. They need somebody who can connect and put the bat on the ball.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that this is a huge trade for the Padres, and I think it's a win for the Padres, and I honestly think it's kind of a loss for the Indians. The Indians are getting two players who, as good as they've been, I mean, Brad Hand's an all-star player because the Padres have to have a player representing. I don't think him on any other team is necessarily an all-star with the amount of blown saves that he's had this year. I think it's been six. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And I think that giving up your top prospect for two relief pitchers shows how desperate you are at that position. I think the Padres are going to have somebody that's going to come in and be able to compete with Austin Hedges. Austin Hedges, obviously being the best defensive catcher in baseball, is now going to have somebody coming up behind him with a better bat. And anytime there's somebody with a better bat, it's going to be a struggle for you to find the starting position. So
yeah, I think Preller in the front office have made some amazing moves, and I think this just solidifies that. Being able to, you know, move Hand and get a top prospect already, like you said, I think on MLB.com we have 10% of the top 100 prospects, so yep. 10 prospects on the board. That's unbelievable.
Three out of the top six. I mean, it's incredible.
And majority of those are top 50 prospects.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So just to add to that list, really just shows that in the future, coming up in the future, you know, the Padres are going to be one exciting team to watch.
Project 2020. I think that
next couple of years.
You're looking at a team very similar to the Kansas City Royals in 2013, and you're looking at a very similar team to the Chicago Cubs Kansas City Royals in 2015, and then 2016 with the Chicago Cubs. They're developing from within, and they're trying to grab onto as many assets as they can. And I think that this is the starting point of, you know, seeing what's to come. I don't think that the Padres are done making moves. I think that you can see a player like Tyson Ross being on the move here, or a player like, I can never remember this guy's name.
Craig Stammen or Kirby Yates?
Kirby Yates.
So bringing on that, I know we kind of talked a little bit, but what do you guys think of clearing out that bullpen, try to move these, you know, Yates, Stammen, include a guy like Austin Hedges in the deal to clear up space?
I mean, Austin Hedges I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. I know I've heard his name mentioned in rumors. I think that they like what they see from him defensively, but you know, the Padres have never had an issue with bullpen. And so we talked briefly today, the three of us outside the podcast, about how, you know, the Padres have never had an issue with the bullpen. I have no problem with them clearing house. They have players coming from the minor leagues that they have to reserve spots for on the 40-man roster. And I think the more players that you can clear up, the more players that we can bring in and see what they have now.
Well, like we said, they have 10 prospects on the top 100, and seven of those 10 are pitchers. So, you know, you have talent that's going to come up and fill those bullpen roles. But, Brandon, what do you think?
Honestly, yeah, I totally agree. I think, obviously, I look at the bats have always been a problem for the Padres. You always look at what their strengths are consistently year in, year out. We've always had, you know, a relief pitcher in the All-Star game.
And they find pitchers.
And they I think you look at Darren Balsley's arguably probably one of the most tenured pitching coaches in all of baseball right now. Honestly, he dates back to the Bruce Bochy era, you know. So he's got that track record of, you know, obviously you look from Trevor Hoffman down to Heath Bell to Houston Street to they had Brandon Morrow was one of the guys that they had, and now you look at Brad Hand. They've had that, Brandon Maurer, sorry. Morrow's the Cubs closer right now, but Morrow actually did pitch for the Padres, but however, they have that track record of, you know, of taking a relief prospect or a pitcher and being able to turn him into a polished closer. And, you know, I do think they have mismanaged Hand, so I do think he's a lot better than what his numbers indicate right now. He's got that slider's just swipes and nobody can touch it, right? You know.
Yeah, we saw Brad Hand on full display during the All-Star game. He pitched the eighth inning scoreless,
lights
out there. So I definitely think that boosted up his little
trade value.
Yeah, absolutely. Not saying he's a bad player when I say that the Cleveland Indians lost this trade. I just think anytime you have to give up your top prospect in order to find relief pitching.
They overpaid for him.
Totally.
Yeah.
So Manny Machado was the next big deal that came off of the board. The Dodgers gave up Yusniel Diaz, who on Baseball HQ is the number 3 overall prospect. He's a really highly touted outfield prospect. Great hitter, a little bit of power there. The Dodgers, I feel like, are taking a huge risk on a rental.
Yeah, definitely they're taking a huge risk. They're kind of banking on him re-signing with them next season. But even still, it's like, you know, that when they get Corey Seager back from injury.
How does he fit into that offense now? Yeah, or that middle infield.
When you look at that trade initially, it looks really bad for the Dodgers because you see 5 prospects. And, you know, we know how highly touted prospects are. But in reality, it's just one major prospect with
4 others
attached just to see if what they can do.
I personally, I don't think it's the worst move ever for the Dodgers. I think it's a move they have to make because of the position they're in. They lost their best, position player. And you don't want to lose a year of control of all of your top talent when you're in that position to contend. So obviously making this move, this is a move that they had to make. If you're the Dodgers front office, you have to make this move. I do think they actually I thought Machado was going to fetch a little bit more than what they gave up for him. I thought he was going to fetch at least a couple top 5 prospects in a team system. So
and again, I think we agree on that point. I don't think this is a huge win for either team. I think any time that you have to give up prospects, especially when you're looking at a player that, you know, he just came off hitting 2 home runs in the Rising Stars game.
Also, the Futures game.
Yeah. So I think that with the Dodgers, if he doesn't re-sign, it's a loss. And I see what you mean by them having to come out and get a player to fill a hole. I think any time that you have to give up prospects to do that, it creates a little bit of a ripple effect in your minor league system. The Dodgers have very inconsistent bats in the outfield and very inconsistent defense. I mean, Matt Kemp has been by far the best player in that outfield, and he's getting older, and this is kind of a fluke year. I don't know how well he'll be able to manage this going forward. I do think that the Orioles could have gotten more for it, but I also think the Dodgers are taking on a big risk. And again, with Corey Seager coming back next year, if they have the ability to re-sign him, I think this is a huge win for the Dodgers, by far. I mean, Manny Machado is easily a top 5 player in baseball. But to give up prospects for a half-year rental, if you don't win a World Series, it's a loss.
Yeah, I think Baltimore is definitely a little – they're happy that they unloaded Machado for something. I think they could have gotten more for him.
I think if they traded him at the beginning of the year, they could have got more.
Foolish
to hold on to him for this long. So
I think that just goes to show how poor of a situation that organization is in, though. I think that with the Dodgers, they're content with what they have right now in the outfield, so I don't think they mind giving up a player like Diaz. But again, going back to the inconsistencies in the outfield, Jock Peterson was supposed to be this guy that came in and dominated, and he's been inconsistent ever since he got into the league.
Yeah. So what do you guys think that the Dodgers are going to do next year? Do you think they'll try to re-sign Machado? Because, I mean, they just renewed Seager's contract earlier this season.
I think, without a doubt, I think they're definitely going to – they're going to go after him, and if they don't, they're going to go after Harper.
Do you think they'll try to talk to him and move him to third base?
Because they made that move, the Matt Kemp trade, to restructure the dollars.
They're going after a huge
prospect. They're going after somebody huge, so that way they're not paying so much in luxury tax after they sign a big boy next year.
Well, you know, Max Muncy stepped on the scene hitting bombs.
He's been a pleasant surprise for them, and he was a waiver pickup from the Oakland A's.
Yeah. Again, I don't look at the players that – I mean, we've seen players come into the league like that with Josh Hamilton, with Chris Davis. Those players, I mean, it's fantastic for a team for that year. But are they going to be able to sustain that throughout their career? You don't know. And so the problem that I have with the Machado trade is that you're banking on the fact that he's going to resign and want to move to third base because you don't want Corey Seager playing second. He's a very fluid shortstop. That's all he's ever played. And Machado's expressed his interest in playing shortstop. I think the biggest winner in this trade, though, is the New York Yankees. I think that he's expressed interest in playing for that organization, and he's going to have the choice of which team he wants to play for next year. And I think that the Yankees, like we talked about last week, not having to give up their top prospect and they're still going to have the opportunity to go after him next year.
Yeah, I definitely think the Yankees should go after him because, you know, DD's locked up till 2020, but even still, they can move him on a one-year deal for not too much.
Yeah, they moved Starling Castro after they locked him up. I mean, it's not something that's...
Apples to apples, Machado's just better. So,
oh, totally.
If you have a guy like that wanting to join your organization, you have to go after it. But, yeah, we'll go on to All-Star Week, Home Run Derby.
That was Home Run Derby. Bryce Harper, phenomenal.
We all called it. I mean, it was kind of one of those things. I don't think anybody was surprised that he won it. I think it was surprising how he won it.
I thought his dad was going to kill it for him there for a second. He was not throwing the ball well.
It was a total Disney ending right there. 9 home runs in 55 seconds. That's phenomenal. And, I mean, I think we're all happy that he was able to do that in front of his home crowd. Probably the last time he's going to be able to do something that remarkable in front of his fans. Actually, if you want to check out our midseason predictions, we actually just posted a video on Three Amigos in a Podcast on our YouTube channel. We actually have our midseason predictions. And, I think obviously I think we kind of have the Nationals not necessarily getting the job done completely this year, not to tip our hand, but maybe the last we're going to see of Bryce Harper as a National. And this was kind of
a good farewell present.
Yeah, and it was definitely I think baseball has done a really good job at getting fans to watch their games and watch their outings, because this was one of the most exciting home run derbies that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, they had me out of my seat. Yeah. Literally out of my seat. I think that, I mean, from top to bottom, obviously Bryce Harper, like Brandon was saying earlier today, he had a little bit easier route to the finals. But Kyle Schwarber going out there knocking out 18 home runs, you know, he set the bar pretty high. And I think for Harper to come alive there in the last 55 seconds, that was incredible to watch. I mean, he looked like...
Well, he hit, 9 out of 10 in that last little bout? That's incredible.
He's a fun guy to watch. He's honestly, I think he's the most exciting. I think we all can agree Trout's the best player in baseball, but Bryce Harper is probably the most entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I think he's the most exciting player in baseball to watch. Entertaining is probably a better way to put it. I think that the gap there, it isn't necessarily as far as people think. I think, you know, Trout being the five-tool player that he is for sure the best player in baseball. I think Bryce Harper just brings a different element. I mean, his passion for the game, his energy that he brings into a stadium.
Swagger.
Yeah. It's something that the only player that he reminds me of is Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, it's the same style of play. I mean, he's on the field, and you just find your eyes kind of dwindling off into his direction. Like, what's he going to do next?
Yeah, not only did the Home Run Derby excite, I mean, the All-Star Game itself was no...
Most home runs we've ever seen in an All-Star Game.
Yeah, broke the record, most home runs, went into extra innings. We saw the, you know, Houston-Astro duo get it done again with Bergman hitting that final two-run shot. Well, they hit back-to-back home runs, not two-run shot, it was back-to-back. Springer, then Bergman. Bergman ends up winning the MVP for the All-Star Game. That was fun to watch, too.
Honestly, I mean, personally, for the most part, I was tuning in. I wanted to see how Brad Hand was going to do. Obviously, as a Padres fan, you want to see your hometown guy. Obviously, I think that's the main reason why MLB has it implemented that each team has one representative at least to the All-Star Game. So, personally, I tuned in for that. I did not get to catch any of the excitement in the extra innings. However, you know, I was very ecstatic that Brad Hand came out, pitched the eighth inning, flawless after Hader, who actually had a little bit of issues that surfaced after the game due to some racial remarks that he had posted on his Twitter account prior. But, I mean, still exciting. Obviously, I saw Gene Segura hit that three-run homer right before, and a lot of home runs, exciting. Anytime it goes to extra innings during the All-Star game, that's just a rare treat. So
yeah, it was definitely exciting. I actually, you know, started tuning in once Brad Hand went in, like you said, because I wanted to see a Padre play and I wanted to support a hometown guy. And to see him go out.
Unfortunately, no longer a hometown guy, but yeah.
At the time, hometown guy, but to see him go out, throw that scoreless inning, that was huge. I definitely thought with the momentum coming in, like you said, with Segura tying it up, that the National League had a chance to kind of switch the momentum. But, you know, it's hard to throw to those guys. You know, they're all stars for a reason.
Yeah, it's anytime you see an All-Star game with that many home runs, it's good for the fans. It's really good for the fans, and they put on a show for Washington, and it was exciting to watch.
Yeah, let's move over. NBA Summer League wrapped up. Trailblazers ended up winning the whole thing. You know, Hart with the Lakers won MVP. It was actually pretty funny because he got tossed out. Did you guys see him get tossed out in that finals game?
Did.
That was, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, they tossed out the MVP in the finals game. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, but you know, these guys are getting, you know, they're emotional. I like seeing emotional players. I like seeing these guys that are competitive. And when they get, when they're not getting their calls and they're not getting, you know, they're going hard to the basket, they're getting fouled, to speak up and say like, hey, can you watch this guy? What are you doing? And I also think, you know, each organization needs to take a look at the referees and umpires and almost go through like a some kind of training for how they need to handle themselves, because that was more or less like the referee stepping out of his shoes. And
yeah, the referees had an issue all year in NBA, and I think that that's something that they're going to try to evaluate, you know, before October when the season starts. Josh Hart, though, had a phenomenal summer league, and I think that that's a player that, you know, you're looking at LeBron James coming out and watching him. He's a player that's going to push for that starting two position, and his defensive ability is fantastic, and, you know, his ability to step out and shoot the three. I mean, and I think ultimately you're seeing a player that came out of Villanova and won a championship, and you're seeing that mentality, and I'm sure the Lakers are happy with that. I think that Colin Sexton was one of the most exciting players to watch in this summer league. I mean, when you're talking about energy, I don't think there's a player out there with more energy and just excitement to be on the NBA court than Colin Sexton, which with the Cavaliers obviously losing a player like LeBron James, they need every ounce of effort they can get. So great for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the summer league, obviously you have these guys that are trying to prove themselves, and you're trying to, you know, make a roster spot, push for this, you know, a potential starting job. Anybody you guys saw come out of the summer league that really piqued your interest?
I mean, me personally, I tuned in for, you know, Clippers, and obviously the guys that we drafted, they played phenomenal. I wish they maybe gave them a little bit more playing time. During the tournament, the Clippers actually, you know, benched them because I think they planned on giving them a full workload. But Josh Hart obviously played phenomenal. I think, you know, Colin Sexton played well. Kevin Knox, he's one of those guys I really want to see how he plays during the regular season for the Knicks. I know this, I'm calling him the GOAT ahead of time because the fans booed him when they drafted him, and usually that's a sure sign that the player's just going to go out and show those fans
why they picked him.
Yeah, yeah, why they picked him. And so, yeah, I look at Knox. He played phenomenal. Jaren Jackson, one of those guys.
I was going to bring up Jaren Jackson.
Jaren Jackson, he's one of those guys. I honestly, I think the Grizzlies scored big here. I think those injuries that they had last year were a blessing in disguise. So the fact that they were able to pick him up in addition to having their solid core that they already have, I think they're already, you know, obviously they're going to be in that playoff discussion again. So
yeah, I think Jaren Jackson was phenomenal in the summer league. And I know we only saw him for a little bit, but, you know, number four overall pick coming out of Michigan State. He was, you know, coming out of, at the beginning of the year, projected to be, you know, a top one or two pick. And you saw the talent there this summer league. So I'm sure Memphis is, you know, ecstatic with what they're seeing from him. Definitely agree with you on the Knox. He was, you know, the energy again that he showed throughout the summer
league.
Such
a raw talent.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys you could just really mold him. He's like a block of clay, I think that's what they're calling him. So.
Yeah. And then the other one with the Spurs, they're, I think you were calling him Pineapple.
Lonnie Walker, I think he was another player
that showed up big. Some of the players that I wasn't too, you know, ecstatic about were the big guys, DeAndre Ayton and Mo Bamba. You know, they obviously, there's some raw talent there. They're big guys with huge wingspans, but you're seeing how length in basketball sometimes is overvalued, and we've seen it go back to people like Greg Oden when he was drafted over Kevin Durant. The players that, you know, end up standing out are the people like Kevin Knox.
Let's transition to, you know, so obviously big trade. Obviously the big one, Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan, pretty much a straight up trade. Obviously there's
Danny Green,
you know,
involved
Danny
in
Green
that,
involved
cap space.
And Jakob Poeltl involved. First round pick that's more than likely going to convey, even though it has some protection. I think there's no doubt that the Raptors are a top 10 team in the NBA.
Top 20, yeah.
Well, it's protected for top 20, but but if they're a top 10 team, it's going to convey. So, yeah, I think there's no doubt that they're gonna be a top 10 team. So, honestly, I think that pick's going to convey. And obviously, in my opinion, I think it's a huge move for the Spurs. I know, obviously, you're getting a player that's a little bit more seasoned in DeRozan, who's, I believe, 28 years old, versus Kawhi, who's 26, if I'm not mistaken.
27, 26.
Yeah, and but DeRozan's under contract for the next 3 years. I don't think it's a bad contract. I do look at it, obviously, you know, if you have your pick of the two players, you're going to obviously take Kawhi over DeRozan. However, you know, if a guy ruins all your trade leverage and demands a trade and specifically designates, you know, the two teams that he wants to be traded to, you know, teams that, especially in the final year of a contract, that pretty much eliminates, you know, all the suitors that are willing to make a trade for that player. So he did put the Spurs in a bad situation. I think RC Buford deserves a lot of credit for making this move. You know, Greg Popovich, obviously, you know, I think this is a year of contemplation. You know, I think he's getting close to retirement. His wife passed away during the postseason. So he's going to think about hanging up pretty soon. And the Spurs want to win while he's still, you know, their head coach. Obviously, one of the best head coaches in modern NBA, you know, one of the best. You know, I think we all can agree on that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think that there's a coach in basketball right now that's better than Greg Popovich. I think with this trade, the Spurs got the best deal that they were going to find with DeMar DeRozan. And who knows? DeMar DeRozan's been anywhere from a top 15 player, rated some as a top 30 player. Being with Greg Popovich, you know, who knows? That might be able to push him into a top 10 player. For me personally, I think that he benefited a lot off of having Kyle Lowry run the point. I think Kyle Lowry is a very underrated point guard in the, you know, NBA. For me, with the Raptors, I mean, they have a brand new head coach. They just fired their coach, who ironically won Coach of the Year after they let him go.
They promoted a coach to their head coach position.
So it's a new guy that's going to be, you know, put in a situation with Kawhi Leonard, who, you know, granted he passes his physical, didn't play at all last year, and has said that he does not want to be in Toronto. So I think that the Raptors gave up a lot for it. But again, with the Spurs, I mean, they've lost Danny Green, who's been a staple. I mean, I know that they wanted to give up his contract regardless. Now they've lost Kawhi Leonard.
Tony Parker.
Tim Duncan to retirement last year. I think we're going to be looking at a Spurs team that's going to be retooling, and I think they're going to have a hard time making it into the playoffs this year. DeMar DeRozan's going to be the main focal point on that team, and you know who knows who's going to be able to get in the ball. Dante Murray had a good year last year, but he's going to have some big shoes to fill. And again, I think that the Spurs got the best available deal that they were going to get from this. You know, with the Lakers, they obviously don't want to trade him to a conference rival. You know, they were able to ship him off to the Eastern Conference. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, like we said, Kawhi still has to pass his physical for this trade to go through, and he hasn't stepped on a basketball court in a year.
Yeah, well, the other big move that he had was Carmelo Anthony being traded off of OKC.
Yeah, and that just seemed more of a cap space. They've already said that the Hawks are going to waive him, and the Hawks were able to get Schroeder off of their books now with Trae Young as well.
And they picked up a first-round pick in the process, so they are stocked with another first-round pick.
I think it's a huge move for the Hawks. I mean, they're obviously retooling, but the East is wide open, so they have time. The Celtics, the 76ers, and, you know, maybe, hopefully, the Raptors. It's hard to tell now. I know last week we talked about them being a top three team, but with the departure of DeMar DeRozan and the uncertainty of Kawhi Leonard, you know, who knows what they're going to be looking like at the end of the
season. Huge risk. Yeah. Huge risk. But definitely, I mean, I think that move's going to save them $90 million in total luxury tax. Obviously, it's a huge move that's going to help them out in the long term. But honestly, that team is going to be capped out for years between, you know, paying Steven Adams, between Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Now you're adding Dennis Schroeder to the mix.
You know, they do have the option, though. You know, if he ends up being deported, his contract is waived. So, you know, it might end up being a victory for both teams. I've always been a fan of Dennis Schroeder. I like the way he plays the game. He's an exciting young player to watch. I think that he earned his contract when he signed that $15 million.
He did at the time.
$15 million a year.
For the next couple of years.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been – last year he kind of –
He definitely took a step back last year.
He took a huge step back
last
year.
And it's hard to see in an organization with the Hawks. I mean, you know, who knows? If he goes to a team with Russell Westbrook and Paul George, Steven Adams, I mean, maybe he'll be able to flourish in that system. I ultimately think that the Hawks are just looking to get all the bad contracts off their books. And with the Thunder, it's a huge move to be able to get rid of that Carmelo Anthony contract. So they are taking a little bit of a contract in, but, you know, they're able to demolish some of that luxury tax as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so they take on one big contract for this year, and they freeze them up down the road. And I know they're big on taking on those draft picks. As you can see, they traded back, you know, from 3 to 5 to get
Trae Young.
Trae Young gave up Doncic and got a first-round pick in the process. So they value those picks really highly, and obviously, this move was a big move for a pick, and it was actually a three-team trade. I think the 76ers got involved too. But
please don't tell me they got another draft pick.
Carmelo gets sent with his 2.79 contract to the Hawks with Schroeder and Muscala. Oh, what? $27.9 million. With Schroeder and Muscala, 2020 first-round pick in the top 14. The Thunder send Muscala to the 76ers, and Luawa Cabaret and Justin Anderson get sent to Atlanta. So there was a lot of teams involved in that.
Yeah. The Luawa Cabaret guy, I mean, he's a raw talent as well. I mean, he's a player that I feel like hasn't been able to flourish with that team because of the addition of J.J. Redick, and, you know, now with Markelle Fultz hopefully being healthy this year. I look for him to be able to hopefully take a step forward this year, proving that he can be a solid two guard in the NBA. But again, ultimately, a lot of these moves that we're seeing now are contract moves. They're just trying to get rid of bad deals, and they're trying to find the best situation for their team. And I think that the Thunder and the Hawks both address that. And again, we'll see what happens with Schroeder. If he ends up getting deported, this might be a huge win for the Thunder.
Well, not only that, but if Schroeder can join Westbrook, I mean, he's a good bench player, and he could add a lot to that.
I think we're going to see Schroeder coming off the bench.
It makes sense. I mean, he's never played the two before. I think that if he could learn, I mean, gosh, that would be lovely. But again, I mean, it's a solid player coming off the bench regardless.
Yeah, and Brandon, that number that the Thunder could save is $107 million.
107, not 90, yeah. So even more. I think, that team is pressed way beyond, and they are paying heavy in luxury tax right now.
And not winning. I feel like anytime you're in a situation like that where you're paying that much money and not coming out on top. I mean, the Cavaliers, the year that they won the title, they had the most luxury tax on that team. It's a luxury you pay for if you're winning titles, but if you're not even contending for a title, what's the worth?
When you get bounced by the Utah Jazz, who, you know, have a
young team
right at the salary cap, you know?
Yeah, well, speaking of contracts too, in transition NFL, Le'Veon Bell, he didn't get his Steelers contract. I definitely think that was a bad move on his part. I think that the Steelers offered him quite a lot of money for four years.
Contract.
A fair contract, yeah. And I think just based on what we see from running backs now, running back market isn't what it is. So he shouldn't expect a big contract. But what do you guys think, Le'Veon Bell signing that one-year deal?
I think that Le'Veon Bell deserved a better contract offer personally. I think that his value, he's sitting right now as the best yards per touch running back in the history of the NFL.
Yeah,
he's at 120 yards a game. And I think that the problem with the contract wasn't the dollar amount. I think that the contract issue is the guaranteed money. And that's not information that's being released out into the NFL or into the media. You know, he gets this offer of 4 years, $70 million, and everybody's like, how could you turn down a deal like that? I think that the issue becomes the Steelers not wanting to fork over the guaranteed money. And ultimately, when you look at the NBA and how all of their contracts are guaranteed, you look at Kirk Cousins' offer being all guaranteed money, the guy has far surpassed any idea that, you know, when he was originally drafted in the second round. And he's being paid $14 million this year. You know, we'll see if he decides to hold out a little bit longer or not. I mean, obviously he's not holding out for another contract because they can't, but I think now you're looking at the NFL and saying you need to start forking up some of this guaranteed money. And
yeah, but I think the only problem with that contract is you see guys like Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara come out and be these all-star guys and these studs. I think the talent level that's just being stepped up at the running back level has changed. And
it's kind of diluted the market.
Exactly. No, I think that it's the NFL taking advantage of players because they can – they have the luxury now to hold on to them for essentially through the prime of their career. And let's not take this like Le'Veon Bell doesn't have a wonderful offer sitting on the table. He's making $14 million this year. That's $6 million more than the next highest paid running back off of his franchise tag. And my only issue with it is that Le'Veon Bell is so much more than a running back to that team. He steps out a wide receiver. He is, you know, always third on that team in receptions, third on that team in receiving yards.
Well, he leads running back in receptions last year.
Yeah, and I think that even if it's not a, you know, a fully guaranteed contract, I think the hiccup comes with the guaranteed money, and I don't think that half of it was guaranteed. And he has at least deserved that. Even if you're not going to give him a fully guaranteed contract, I think that the hiccup that most people aren't really understanding is the fact that the majority of his contract that he was being offered wasn't guaranteed.
So I guess my next question would be, you know, do you see him on the Steelers next year? And if not, what team do you think picks him up?
I don't foresee him going back to the Steelers.
Well,
I
he's
think
already
that
said he's not going to –
no, that his agent has said that he doesn't think that.
No, he released a statement as well. He released a statement saying, "I've enjoyed my time in Pittsburgh, but with
but I think that's more of the Steelers aren't going to offer it to him. I don't think that he's not willing to take an offer from them. I think that they haven't been able to reach an agreement, and he doesn't foresee that happening in free agency this year as well.
Yeah, and but that's the point. I don't think that – so up to him, he would want to be with the Steelers. But
absolutely.
Based on the fact that he's not going to get the contract that he wants or that he feels he would be deserving of, he's not going to be with the Steelers.
No, he won't be with the Steelers next year.
I think a team that he does go to would be – you know, you look at what teams are weak at the running back position and are right there. I think the Texans.
San Diego Chargers.
That was who I was
going to
say.
The Texans could
San Diego Chargers.
No, the Chargers. Gore,
you mean
Melvin
L.A.
Gore,
Chargers?
L.A.,
no.
Yeah.
No,
San Diego Chargers could use, you know, they could use a quarterback, a running back, an offensive
they
line.
Need a,
you know, they
need
could
a,
tool a whole team out.
They need a whole. Yeah, exactly.
But I could see the Texans.
That's enough from the peanut gallery, but go ahead.
I could see the Texans going after him. I could see, you know, a team like the Bengals going for
yeah.
him.
That's ironic because those are the top two teams that I have on my list. I mean, obviously with Joe Mixon, I still think that he has a lot to prove, and you know whether or not he should be in this league is a different question. But I think that a team like the Houston Texans is the number one suitor. Obviously, they have Lamar Miller under contract, but that's a pretty easy move. He is a phenomenal player, and I think putting him in an offense with Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, you're looking at a very similar offense that the Pittsburgh Steelers have. I think the other biggest reason that the Steelers don't want to spend the money on a player like Le'Veon Bell is their defense is awful. They have had, I mean, over the history of the NFL, the Steelers have always had a very prominent defense, and that has been their number one struggle. I mean, last year alone, in the divisional round of the playoffs, they gave up 40 points to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I think that they're trying to look more into investing money under the defensive side of the ball. But I think that the Houston Texans are the number one team,
well,
in my opinion.
I could also see the Vikings going after them, depending on how Dalvin Cook comes back after that injury. I mean, they had Latavius Murray in the backfield, and he was a solid, you know, spell back for them. But you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can't come to an agreement with him where he'll go. But, I mean, there was another, you know, huge news in NFL that top prospect QB JT Daniels, USC commit. I thought that was
– so he was actually
a good ranking.
He's a commit from this past offseason. So he actually enrolled in December to – push for a starting job as USC's quarterback. And I don't know if either of you guys know this, but I'm a huge USC fan.
He's a Mater Dei high school player out of Los Angeles. A lot of big names coming out of that school.
They're quarterback
Matt
university.
Matt Barkley. Yeah, quarterback university. Matt Barkley, Matt Leinart, Colt Brennan. Lots of good college prospects coming out of there. I think with the departure of Sam Darnold, you're going to be seeing another freshman being able to come in, like when Matt Barkley came out of high school, possibly coming and stepping into that starting role. He's a phenomenal talent. He's a, you know, 6'2", huge arm, runs a pro-style offense just like USC does. I think he's a guy in 3 or 4 years that we're going to be talking about being a top five pick in this NFL, in the NFL draft.
Yeah, that school's definitely pumped out quarterbacks. So in a couple of years, like you said, it'll be definitely interesting to see where he falls and where he goes to. I kind of wanted to just move into hockey real quick, go over my early predictions for Calder Trophy winners. For you that don't know, that's the NHL's version of the Rookie of the Year MVP award. So two big names for the Canucks, Elias Pettersson and Brock Boeser. Pettersson was the fifth overall pick in 2017. He played in the Swedish Hockey League last year. He won the regular season scoring title, and he was the playoff MVP. And then you have another true rookie, Brock Boeser. Right now he's leading all rookies in goals, even though he missed the first two games. You know, a couple other guys that I'm thinking of, obviously the Sabres with Rasmus Dahlin. He's the number one overall
Russian
pick this year for a reason. Big defenseman. I think the Sabres will get a lot out of him this season. You know, another guy I'm thinking about is Matthew Barzal. For the Islanders, this kid has so far in the summer league games and stuff, he's had 3 games of 5 points or more, or 3 5-point games. Another guy that I'm thinking about is the Lightning, Anthony Cirelli. He played 18 games last season in regular season, 17 in the playoffs. He had 3 points in those playoff games. He's a third line guy on the highest scoring offense, so I could see him moving around a little bit. If he can move up and, you know, really show what he's got, that'll be huge, and definitely put his name higher on that list. Another guy, the second overall pick for Carolina, Andrei Svechnikov. You know, the general manager of Carolina has even said he's their franchise guy and he's the guy they want to build around. Obviously, I know it's early in the season, so these picks are kind of, you know, out there. There's a huge list of guys. I think the rookie class this season is going to be huge, and they're definitely going to have to show. They're definitely going to show out, and it'll be exciting to watch these young guys play.
Do you guys have any little last remarks that you want to go over?
Yeah, one last little touch-up I'd like to go over just before we go on is the Michael Porter Jr. Had a second back surgery today.
Oh, yeah.
Number 14th overall pick by the Denver Nuggets. He was projected to go as high as number one, and everybody was concerned about his back, and looks like everybody was right. He 19 years old, going in for a second back surgery, and you know, obviously he's got a lot of time to recover, but we'll see how that ends up panning out for him.
You know, I think we were texting during the draft, and, you know, my Clippers had two lottery picks, and they had a chance to take Michael Porter with their second pick. And
well, two, both of them, yeah.
Yeah, and I was, I texted Ryan. I was like, I want the Clippers to make at least one attempt at him. I feel like they can afford to make that move for the high risk, high upside guy. And honestly, I think we're looking, with our experience with a number of guys, Gallinari, Blake Griffin, all these guys, we have a history. We always draft the guy who gets hurt all the time. And, maybe he's a nice raw talent if he can stay healthy. But, there's value to health. And a guy who can be out there for 82 games or 162 games, 16 games, you name it, depending on the sport. There's true value there. So
definitely, and a definitely. Lot of it's luck, and I mean, some of the best players in the world aren't the luckiest, and they don't get recognized as being the best players because of that. So I think that you're looking at a player that, 19 years old and having a second back surgery in 1 year. I mean, it's a lot to be said, and who knows? I mean, I wish the guy the best. I hope he comes back healthy, and I hope that this last surgery can, lead to a long-standing career in the NBA, but a very interesting outlook on a player that was very highly touted coming out of high school.
Yeah. Well, our little fun stat of the day, on this day in history, and was it 1989, Tony Gwynn got his first major league hit. So, that's fun. We are overall, after all, San Diego podcast, repping the Padres. So, Mr. Padres.
We don't talk about him too much, but...
Yeah, Mr. Padre, so that's fun. RIP
Rest
Tony
in peace,
Gwynn.
Tony Gwynn, yep.
Definitely. Yep. Earlier today, we did our second half MLB draft MLB playoff prediction. We have the Yankees going off against the Dodgers. That video is posted on YouTube. Check it out for our picks and who we have taking the World Series.
Yeah, check us out on Twitter, Three Amigos in a Podcast. If you guys have any comments, let us know.
Yeah. Also, you can find us on Podomatic, iTunes, and Podcast Addict. Also, watch that video up on YouTube. Tune in a couple weeks. We're going to do our NFL fantasy draft. Like we said, follow us on Twitter, @3amigos_andapod. We always love a comment or anything that we may have missed, so you can email us, @3amigosandapodcast@gmail.com. Give us a follow, give us a like, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff, so we can keep doing this week in, week out. But Three Amigos in a Podcast, thank you guys.
Give us a shout out.
Thanks for listening.